This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, it is a playoff atmosphere here at Sports Map Radio Network Studios. We've got you covered, everything you need to know for week 18 of the NFL season. We're going to break it all down on who advances or perhaps who stays at home. Welcome in. I am Elissa Walker Campbell, host of the Big E Sports Show. First program back to kick off 2024. And if you are just joining us for the first time, mark it down. Join us every Saturday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time. And of course, powered by Progressive Insurance. Delighted to open up the phone lines. We are thrilled to have back with us the man, the myth, the legend, and that is Andy McNamara. Andy, good to have you back on. Happy New Year, and I'm sure that pencil got real sharp and you wrote down all of your goals for 2024 and, of course, for the Browns to make the Super Bowl, right?
Oh, yes. Alyssa, Happy New Year to you, to all the listeners. Glad to be on it to kick things off. And who knew if you gave me the bingo card of things to expect this year and said, one, that Joe Flacco would even start, yeah. Never mind, start and lead the Browns and be playing at one of, if not the highest level of any quarterback in the league right now, I would have said you're crazy. But here we are.
Well, let's talk some Flacco fever, because help us understand just the impact and how this has all played out. I mean, hello, I think he's getting ready to turn 39. When's his birthday? It's coming up.
Yeah, he's going to be turning 39. It's so funny, Alyssa, because in Cleveland, the local radio stations around there, people are sending in Flacco songs. There's Flacco for Flacco, Flacco Fever to like the Saturday night, disco fever set. Like it's crazy. And to think he was a member, of course, won the Super Bowl with the hated Ravens in 2012. And this is a guy who's tied all time for most playoff road victories. He had that near perfect playoff run when they won the Super Bowl through no interceptions. He's cool, calm, collected. The team loves him. The city, the fans love him. So, heck, you know what? Let's do like George Costanza said, Alyssa, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Hey, he is back. National fantasy football betting host Andy McNamara. Check him out, Topham Sports, and give him a follow on X or Twitter at AndyMC81. And the Cleveland Browns, because of Joe Flacco, you know, and his display and what he's been able to do, has got them going back to the playoffs. He spent, as you were just talking about, his first 11 seasons in Baltimore. How has he changed? I mean, what has he shown you, and what have we learned about him in terms of his game?
Well, what's changed for him, I think, from hearing him speak, is he's just appreciates the game. Not that he ever took it for granted, right. But he, by all accounts, was retired. He played his last game with the Jets. He was 1-9 there. Now, the Jets were not good, but it seemed just like, okay, that's it. He had legitimately ordered Sunday ticket to watch football on his couch. He wasn't intending to play, but he kept sharp. He was to play, you know, play catch every day, wherever his brother and dad and all that. And it just seems like he appreciates the game. Even there was some sound captured after the Thursday win. His father said to him, "This is the most fun I've ever seen you have on a football field." He's just so thankful, so grateful to have another chance at something that was pretty much taken away from him. So I think that's it. He's loose, he's having fun, and he has got the confidence level of this team at an all-time high.
Should you make your case that the Browns could be a Super Bowl threat?
You know what? Being conditioned to not have nice things as a Browns fan, it's tough for me to say, but really, like, look at the rest of the league. There's no super dominant, okay, this is a sure thing team this year. There just isn't, especially in the AFC. So to get to the Super Bowl, I think the Browns, and this is a team too that has had one of the most injured plague seasons in the whole NFL this year. If they're doing it with this team, I think you can make a case for them. If you can keep Flacco healthy, you don't suffer any significant injuries, you should. You're getting your punter back this week. Remember, too, the punter and kicker were both injured last week, too. Mm-hmm. You should be getting your kicker back. Grant Delpit, the Pro Bowl alternate safety, could be coming back. Same with Okoronkwo, the pass rusher, could be coming back for the playoffs. So if you're actually getting healthier with still a fresh Joe Flacco, this Browns team, man, hey, you can make a case they could get to the Super Bowl.
He is back. Andy McNamara, give him a follow on X at AndyMC81, National Fantasy Football Betting Host, Topham Sports. And it is kind of interesting. I don't want to digress too much, but you're a proud Canadian. But tell us the backstory. I mean, how in the world did you become a Cleveland Browns fan?
I know, it's so weird. Like, what? How do you want to cheer for the Bills? It's closer to Toronto.
Uh-huh.
And my story, I'm a third generation Browns fan. My son and daughter are now fourth generation. I've bribed them with every win, unless it was chocolate chip pancakes. So, that helps. Right? That helps. Yeah, you do what you got to do. But my story, third generation, because my grandfather, when the Browns came into existence in 1946, just back from the war and in Toronto, mm-hmm. on the radio, there were no Buffalo Bills. It was either the New York Giants or the Cleveland Browns that you listen to for NFL. So the Browns had Paul Brown and Otto Graham winning championships. He became a fan. Then my father, they were still the only team on radio and TV. It was either the Giants or the Browns, and there was Jim Brown running wild and winning championships. And that got passed on to me, and boy, I hope this is finally my time, because I will say this, I have put in my dues.
Yes. Well, the Cleveland Browns, they're headed to the playoffs, 11-5, and of course they're sitting out Joe Flacco. He will not play tomorrow at Cincinnati. I want you to talk some more, just expound on just why this offense has really come together. I mean, the Browns have been able to get their running game going just in time for the playoffs.
Yeah, great point. And a large part of that comes back to this offensive line. And I think one of the most underrated position coaches in all of the NFL, and that's Bill Callahan, former head coach in the league. He is an offensive line genius. And Alyssa, what he's been able to do in patchwork, mm-hmm. you're on your third right tackle, your second left tackle. You've had backup centers and guards in throughout the year. And to keep this run game going and even treading water when it wasn't. Oh, and by the way, you lost Nick Chubb in game two. That's not anything easy to overcome. And you've kept this running game with the offensive line going. And now when you mix in Flacco, where teams cannot stack the box. Under the backup quarterbacks, you stack the box because, well, they couldn't throw the bomb. Well, Joe Flacco, he doesn't care. He'll beat you every day downfield, throw 50 yards with a flick of the wrist. And so now teams have to back off a bit. That opens up some room for the run game. You combine that with the offensive line and the nice play of Jerome Ford, Kareem Hunt, a little bit of Pierre Strong sprinkled in. And that's why you have this Browns team ready to pounce for the playoffs.
Well, as the Browns can make history with a win over the Bengals on Sunday, just your thoughts on head coach Kevin Stefanski and what he has been able to get done and accomplish.
Boy, Alyssa, it's unreal because look what he's done with four different quarterbacks. Now, the Houston Texans did it and made the playoffs, but right. It was much less of a dominant factor in a weak division. The Browns have been able to not just survive, they've been able to actually play their best football with their fourth quarterback, Joe Flacco. Now starting five, boy, Jeff Driscoll beats the Bengals, there'll be five different quarterbacks. The way he's been able to keep calm, and what you notice, Alyssa, when teams really buy in and you have a good head coach, the players start to say, and you can tell they believe the same message the coach is saying. They're all saying, we need to go 1-0. And it's not just fluff. It's not, no one's talking about individual goals. Everything's about team. And it is such a buy-in. And what? Why? Well, you have Jim Schwartz in to help, a defensive coordinator who's been phenomenal, and you're winning. And when you're winning, you're going to believe the man who's leading that way, and that is Kevin Stefanski. And for my money, this guy should be coach of the year.
Hey, let's turn our attention to the Colts and the Texans. I mean, how do you see this one playing out?
Boy, what a race for the AFC South. Who would have thought one of the more interesting divisions, right? Like, you have...
It's been compelling to watch. Yeah.
Yes, and Alyssa, Texans, Colts, and Jags all at 9-7, all above 500. And you look at what they've had to overcome. If the Jags win on Sunday, they're in no matter what. If they lose to the Titans, and we know those divisional games could be Mike Vrabel's last year, the Jags have been struggling, so it's far from a given. You look at the Texans and Colts, my advantage goes to the Texans because C.J. Stroud is back. Now, the Browns play the winner of the AFC South. I don't want the Texans to win. The team I want to play the least is C.J. Stroud because the Browns beat the Texans, every team in the AFC South actually this year, but they beat Houston without C.J. Stroud. And that is, as we know, a different animal and what a year he's been having. So I think the Texans do win that game in Indy. And by the way, let's give credit to the Colts. They lose Anthony Richardson and they're getting it done with Gardner Minshew to have a shot and the last week of the season at the division title.
Houston is on the road. They are in Indianapolis. And, you know, we were just talking about Kevin Stefanski and just the remarkable job that he has done with the Browns. Let's tip our hat to D'Amico Ryans. I mean, just phenomenal body of work.
Oh, no doubt. Think of the expectations coming in for D'Amico Ryan. You fire the Texans, 2 years, two fired coaches. He came in, and the big difference, and one of the big reasons, of course, that the city and the team and the players and everyone loves him is because he said, I want to coach the Texans. I was a player. I want to come here. He could have got another job. He was a hot candidate.
Yeah.
He could. He said, I wanted to be here. And that immediately ingratiates you, of course, to the fan base. And then, okay, you look at that. All right, you got a rookie QB, and 4 wins probably, right? Okay. Well, no. Now, like we said, they're 9-7. They're knocking on the door. If they win, they've done all they can do to get into the playoffs and win. Not just make the playoffs, but win the division.
Yeah.
With this team, which really, if you look across it, not remarkable.
Uh-huh.
Running game. Like, no running back is scaring you coming in, but look what you've done with Devin Singletary, a cast off from Buffalo. You have a hodgepodge of wide receivers, Tank Dell before he went down. The defense stepping up from, defense not perfect, but they've been getting it done when they've needed to for the most part. He'd be the 1B to coach of the year for me. Like, if Kevin Stefanski doesn't win and they give it to D'Amico Ryans, I'm not going to be upset about it.
Mm-hmm. It is week 18 of the NFL season, breaking it all down with our guy from Topham Sports. He's amazing. National fantasy football betting host, Andy McNamara. Give him a follow on social media, at AndyMC81. Enjoy all the coverage, and we're looking forward to the big game tonight with the Colts and the Texans, 8:15 Eastern. Talk to you real soon, Andy. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. Talk soon.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. We will be right back. Dick Vermeil is coming up next.
You're listening to the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show, powered by our friends at Progressive Insurance. And drivers who switch and save with Progressive, did you know they save nearly $750 on average? Indeed, it is week 18 of the NFL season, and playoff spots are on the line. That's right, just 1 week left of the regular season, so there's a lot determined in the playoff picture. We are thrilled to have back with us and have him weigh in on a number of matchups and highlight some of his former teams, legendary NFL, Super Bowl winning coach, and he is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the great Dick Vermeil. Happy New Year, Coach.
Same to you. Same to you and the family.
Thank you. Well, it's the final weekend of the regular season, so we're going to find out who advances or who stays home. And I want you to take us back to your time in the NFL. When this time of year rolled around for you as a head coach, how did you manage the stress level of this very demanding job? Because it's got to be overwhelming at times.
Oh, no question. But, you know, when the jobs that I took initially, we were losing,
mm-hmm.
so the stress level wasn't magnified by playoff pressure. It was magnified, you're going to keep your job.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, the stress level changes in its perspective when all of a sudden the pressure is how you're going to do in the playoffs. And that's a good kind of pressure. That's a good kind of pressure. And, you know, it always takes time to get your team in a position to compete and in the playoffs. And, you know, look what's happening right now.
Yeah.
You know, a number of teams have it all locked up and some guys don't. And certain things happen. One team wins and one team loses and it changes four other teams. So it's amazing. Yeah.
Well, playoff football, it is very special. And every week, what you're just trying to stay alive and trending in the right direction so that you're one step closer to that ultimate achievement. And I just have to wonder, I mean, how did you approach the postseason? Because you're trying to sharpen their focus and get them ready for the next level. Everything's got to be cleaner and you've got to be firing on all cylinders.
Well, first off, the fact that you're in the playoffs provides a lot of motivation and focus for your team automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it as a coach. The players recognize, hey, we worked, played 17 games. All of a sudden now we're in a position to play a game where you win it, it's over. If you win it, you move on. If you lose it, it's over. And that in itself creates a deeper level of focus. And also game day, it increases the level of intensity just a little bit. Consistently, it always happens. Teams play slightly harder than they've ever played, even though they played well enough to be in the playoffs. Play harder when they get the best against the best.
You talk about game day in the postseason, but what was a typical work day for you during the NFL? Let's go under the helmet, and what did you experience as a head coach and the intensity?
Well, you know, the work day doesn't change that much playoff-wise. Of course, if you have the bye, it makes it nice.
Sure.
You can give the coaches opportunities that first week to go home at night. If you have the bye, the players some extra time off for freshening up. But the actual work time, the day of preparation, is you stick with the routine that got you there. So you've got to be careful of trying to reinvent your process when it's been successful for you. And I can remember talking to many coaches when I was a young coach and asking advice. What's the most important thing to do when you're getting ready for the playoffs?
Yeah.
Most of them said, don't forget how you got there. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. You know, do what you've been doing. And the fact that you're in the playoffs will add intensity and focus and concentration on your entire organization. Even the people selling tickets will be doing their job better those weeks. You know, it just magnifies the importance of every game. And it's exciting. You know, I've been in the playoffs and eliminated and not be able to go to the Super Bowl. I've been in the playoffs and went to the Super Bowl twice. And the second time was totally different, Alyssa, because the second time when we went with the Rams, we didn't have a bye.
Yeah.
We won our championship game on Sunday, and we were on an airplane Monday flying to Atlanta to get ready to play, the Titans in the Super Bowl 34. And that's not the best way to go to the Super Bowl. It is not. It's a force pressure deal, and it really magnifies the different issues. When you have a week bye between your winning your conference championship and then going to the Super Bowl, it makes it a lot easier on the staff and the players.
He is simply the best Pro Football Hall of Famer. Dick Vermeil with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. It is week 18 of the NFL season. And let's kind of be reflective, too, on how much the game has changed. And what's the difference now between, you know, now and when you coached? I mean, it seems like for so many of these head coaches, I mean, there is no off season. You've got free agency, you've got draft, you've got off-season workouts. When does it ever end?
It really doesn't, you know. Yeah, it really does. There's really no off season anymore. There's just different phases of the seasons, you know, and you just repeated all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different kinds of concentration, different emphasis at different times. The off season is a lot into personnel you don't have, the evaluation for the draft, the evaluation of free agency, contract negotiation, keeping the players you want to keep, signing the players you want to sign off other rosters. So there's a lot of things you're involved with. Some head coaches have more involvement in those processes than others. Sometimes it's 90% GM and 10% head coach. Sometimes it's 50-50. You never know what it is. But, today, more than ever, I notice this as a fan, that there is no off-season for the radio stations anymore. They're always talking about football. They have football debates every morning on WIP. It's starting at 8 o'clock when I start watching, listening to them, or 7:30 or so.
Uh-huh.
They're talking football in June, April, May. They're talking about different phases, different players, what could happen, what's going to happen. It's amazing how big the game has become.
It is 365 and an exciting time to
no
be a part of this business.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about some of these matchups and, of course, your former team. What in the world has gone wrong in Philadelphia? Just give us your level of concern with the Eagles, and what's the biggest issue, Dick, that they're facing right now?
Well, I think the biggest issue they faced coming into the season was they were evaluated as a team that's going to be better than they end up being, and that always creates a lot of controversy toward the end of the season. Very few teams ever remain what they were. They either get better or they get a little worse. And when you come out of the Super Bowl, very few teams are as good as they were the year they went to the Super Bowl. The Eagles started up 10-1, but all of a sudden they get into the tougher part of the schedule. And then, you know, now they've won what? Yeah, they've lost 3 out of the last 4.
Mm-hmm.
So there's real pressure on them. They lost the number one position in the conference. You know, now they're fighting to win the division. Then they're not as good as they were on defense. Offensively, they're not far off. But defensively, they've lost a huge edge. They've lost the pass rush. They led the league in sacks last year at 70. You know, and this year they're struggling. So I, you know, not being a coach on that staff, not being in their meeting rooms, not being on their practice field, it's hard for me to pinpoint any one thing. Not hard to say they aren't as good as they were, and they haven't met expectations. Maybe the expectations were too great in the first place.
So there's been a lot of talk about how much blame falls on the shoulders of Jalen Hurts. I mean, it's stunning to see how this is all unraveling, and his passing numbers are down this season. So, and let's not forget, I mean, like, he entered the season as the favorite to win the MVP.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, you know, to me, it's a multiple thing.
Okay.
The little things that aren't as good as they were affect the quarterback throughout the team more than any other position. You know, and sometimes your schedule is a little bit tougher. You play more good defensive teams this year than you did last year. More
sure.
Better pass defense team, better pass rush team. But plus, when you've been a Super Bowl team and you've been given the recognition and honors, you help motivate your opponent. But Jalen Hurts is the same guy. Now, he had a knee issue for a while. But, you know, he's a great football player, a great quarterback, and a great kid. His quarterback efficiency rating right now ranks him number 17th in the league at a 91. You know, and when I was coaching last year, if you had a 91, you'd be in the top five. Now there's five guys over 100, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that contribute to that. They had offensive coordinator changing, okay. Is that a positive or a negative? Sometimes it's a big positive. Sometimes it's a negative. You don't know what it is, and I can't put my finger on it. But he obviously isn't performing like he did. I think he's working like he did. I think he worked out in the offseason just like he's always done. It's just an accumulation of a lot of little things that have created the results he's getting right now.
Hey, we are winding down our time. Pro Football Hall of Famer Dick Vermeil with us at Sports Map Radio Network, another one of your former teams. Give me a quick hit on the Chiefs and the Chargers. 4:25 Eastern Time kickoff on Sunday. What do we need to know about this matchup?
Well, the Chiefs are a better football team, and I think they'll beat them. But you know, you still have to play that way. You still have to play that way game day. The old saying, just be the best team game day.
Yeah.
That's what they have to be, and they have been more consistently the best team game day in years past, in contrast to this year. I think they will step up and play very well. Plus, I see them to make a nice little jump when they get into the playoffs. I do. I expect them to get better.
Always an honor when Super Bowl winning coach and Pro Football Hall of Famer joins us at Sports Map Radio Network, the great Dick Vermeil. Happy New Year to you and Carol, and we look forward to another conversation here real soon. Thank you, Coach.
I look forward to it, Lisa. Thank you.
You bet.
Happy New Year.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio, Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, powered by Progressive Insurance. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Well, it is our first show back since Christmas break. Happy New Year to all of you tuning in. It's been fast and furious as it's the final week of the regular season in the NFL, and a lot is on the line for a number of teams. But right now in hour one, we're going to shift gears and we're going to go inside the ropes and hit on some PGA news and notes. Always a true pleasure when he is joining us. That is former PGA pro, author, always a Big E favorite, my guy, that is Larry Miller. Hello, Larry. Happy New Year.
Hey, good afternoon, and Happy New Year to you and to all the listeners out there and all the golfers out there.
Well, I am anxious to hear, what are some of those New Year golfing goal resolutions that you have? I'm sure it's to regain some of that yardage from your younger days. Yes, Larry?
Yeah, I gain about 30 or 40 yards. let's see, shoot 59.
Okay, no pressure.
Yeah, I think we can just stop there. That would fill the cup up pretty good.
Well, for all the golfers that are tuning in, I mean, this is the time of year that you are reflective and you are setting goals. You want to shoot lower scores throughout the seasons. So what kind of advice would you provide, Larry, in terms of just some measurable, realistic golf resolutions to help you post a low round?
Well, one thing is that if you resolve to improve this year, one thing you have to do is you have to improve the way you practice.
Okay.
You know, most people don't improve very much because they don't practice the right way. And they, you know, so many people get out there and they think that they're warming up. They hit a few balls and they're loosening up. But that's not practice. That's just loosening up a little bit. And if you're going to improve your golf game, then you need to do correct repetitions. You need to get out there with a qualified teacher, a PGA professional, and find out what it is you need to practice on and how to do it. And it has to be very structured, and it has to be productive. So the only way to do that is to not just bang balls and try to figure it out yourself, because all that does is result in the endless loop of Band-Aid fixes and frustration. So, you know, get a good teacher. You know, they have TrackMan now they use. They have great video equipment. And so a good teacher can very quickly isolate the things that you have to work on specifically for you, and he'll tell you or she will tell you how to do it. And so then when you practice, then you have a set plan, and your practice becomes productive, and that's how you can improve your golf game.
What a great way to kick off our New Year's program. Larry Miller, he is back, former PGA pro and author. And as we talk about golf resolutions, I mean, it's one thing to set some, you know, new goals, but I think it's about being able to handle the truth and really identify and reflect on what's holding you back. I mean, self-evaluation is very important, not just in the game of golf, but just overall.
Yes, it's true. And so many people also make the mistake of playing the wrong tee boxes. You know, they play tee boxes that make the course too long and too difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they become more frustrated because they're not scoring well and can't reach the green in regulation. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with moving up a tee as you lose a little yardage. And you want to play a realistic length golf course for the way you hit the ball. So, you know, if you can't drive the ball past, say, you know, 220 yards, then you have no business on the back tees, because all you're going to do is you're going to be missing, you know, 14 greens around in regulation, and your score is going to climb, and you're going to be frustrated. So that's one thing that you can do. And also, the goals that you set, you know, try to set goals month by month. Let's say one month you're going to work on your shots from 100 yards into the green, which includes pitching, chipping, wedge play, bunker shots, putting. And then maybe the next month you work on your middle irons, let's say your 4, 5, 6, 7 iron maybe, and the next month you're driving, you know. So set monthly goals instead of just having a random method of practice and goal setting. And that way you can see improvement step by step. And by the time you get to middle of the year, you're going to be better. You're going to be better at all aspects of your game.
Well, what about mentally? I mean, how can you improve and get better with the mental aspect of the game of golf?
Well, the mental aspects is you have to be able to accept adversity, number one, because if you make a double bogey or triple or something on a hole, and if you get so upset that it carries on to the next shot or next hole, you're going to string out the bad holes. So you have to learn that golf is 18 holes, and you make a number on each hole. And so when you get to the end, mm-hmm. you add up those 18 numbers, but you've got to give each hole and try to make a number, the best number that you can on each hole from hole to hole. If you make an 8 on a hole, that's over with. Draw the curtain on that. Go to the next hole. See what kind of score you can make, the best score you can make. And I tell the boys all the time, Stephen and your son Eli, both mm-hmm. of them, that the way to play tournament golf is to approach every hole as a tournament in itself.
Yes.
And no matter what happens on any hole, you have a new tournament beginning on the next tee box. And that way it keeps you on a positive momentum rather than stringing out bad holes by getting frustrated and angry over a bad hole. So I think that's one thing you can do is to learn to deal with adversity and move on, always stay in the present. And that way you will reduce the number of bad holes that you have.
Hey, we're glad you're with us this Saturday afternoon. Sports Map Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Larry Miller with us. And let's move ahead. Let's talk some PGA news and notes. And a little bit of a surprise that Scottie Scheffler was named Player of the Year. Or do you believe that John Rahm got the short end of the deal? I mean, Scottie Scheffler had an amazing season. How do you weigh this out? What do you think?
Well, I think clearly Scottie Scheffler is the number one player in the world right now. His ball striking is something that the tour hasn't seen, I don't know, maybe since Ben Hogan. I mean, you look at his numbers, and they're Hogan-like numbers in regulation. And he's more consistent, too. I think John Rahm was hot and cold. He had a great year, but he had spells. Scottie Scheffler was rocking along all year, right there. You know, if he didn't win, he was right in there. So I think him being voted Player of the Year was the right choice, right decision. But that's not too... lessen what John Rahm did either.
Well, John Rahm, he did win four times in 2023. Scottie Scheffler won twice. John Rahm won the Masters. Scottie Scheffler won the Players. And as you're talking about, I mean, Scottie Scheffler hardly undeserving of this prestigious honor. And, I mean, obviously is number one in the official world golf rankings. And, you know, let's talk about Scottie Scheffler's game. And what do you appreciate the most? I mean, it's so refreshing what he brings to the sport.
Yeah, he certainly has a non-traditional move at the ball, a golf swing, you know, the way that his right side and right foot, you know, drags, kicks in and drags along the ground at the finish. It's almost like he walks after the shot. Gary Player kind of did the same thing, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. And Gary Player, you know, has won, I don't know, 70-something golf tournaments. And he's got the Grand Slam in, of majors twice. Not the Grand Slam, but, you know, he's won every major twice, which only a few guys have done. And he had the same type of technique as Scottie Scheffler. So maybe there's something to that. but Scottie's a big guy. He's like 6'5", you know, and hits it a long way. And tee to green, like I said, we haven't seen it since Ben Hogan, where you're hitting 15 greens around in regulation. That's crazy. And he was like 120th in putting and still is number one in the world. Now, that's pretty incredible, and that really speaks to his tee to green game. So, and you know, it's been said that if he becomes a great putter, he might win, you know, 15 times a year. That's how good he hits it.
Well, Stephen and Eli were at the College Golf Fellowship retreat up in Dallas in late November at Stonebriar Golf Club. And, of course, Scottie Scheffler, he was there. And he talked about that he's made some changes in terms of he got a new putter and he got a new putting coach in Phil Kenyon. I mean, obviously that has made a big-time difference.
Yeah, he got better toward the end of the year with his putting, for sure. So the work with Phil Kenyon has paid off. And, you know, he made little changes to his putter, too, a different grip on it. Not the way he holds it, but a different type of grip. And, you know, and I think that the changes he made, it showed. It showed at the end of the year. He was actually, his putting average the last 6 weeks of the year were drastically different and lower, you know, strokes gained putting than it was the previous 10 months.
What do you think are the keys to becoming a great putter? And, Larry, are you an aim point guy?
No, I'm not an aim point guy, but I have learned that it is much better to use the line on the ball to line up. I resisted that for a long time. I'm very much a feel putter.
Right.
You know, I am not a technique putter. I'm a feel putter. And so I didn't use the line on the ball for a very long time. And the reason I didn't was because I could never be quite sure if it was right or not. But recently, and I say in the last 6 months, I've started using the line. And I've made a lot more putts, so there's a valid, you know, validity to doing that, to using the line. But as far as aim point goes, no, I know it's another way to maximize your chances, but I just think it's not for me because I'm a field putter. I think a more scientific guy, that's who it's for, and it works. So to each his own when it comes to putting. It's very individual.
It is our first show back since Christmas break. Always a true pleasure when we have the opportunity to catch up with Larry Miller, former PGA pro. He will be with us each and every week. Have a great weekend. And Larry, we'll look forward to our conversation next week. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll have a lot to discuss, and you all have a great week.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
You bet. Welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. Indeed, it is a very big weekend here in Houston as the College Football National Championship is set and will get underway on Monday night at NRG Stadium with the Michigan Wolverines and the Washington Huskies. And we're going to break it all down in our next segment. But first, we are powered by Progressive. Did you know the drivers who switch and save with Progressive, they save nearly $700 on average. Go to Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We are thrilled to have back with us here in Hour 1, CBS Sports Radio Network, Oklahoma City. That's my guy, James Hale. Happy New Year, James. I know you're playing a little bit hurt today. How are we doing, and how are you starting off the new year?
Well, you know, I mean, hey, I'm making it. You know what I mean? I mean, if you don't fight through adversity, you're not worth your weight in salt anyway. So, you know, my dad always said, hey, you're not sick, let's go.
Yeah.
And I never got out of school. So, I went anyway, and it didn't matter if I was throwing up in the room or whatever. Let's go, you know. So I learned, this is what you do, so let's do it. So,
okay.
Anyway, you know, the big game's in Houston. That's your hometown. I heard you're going to, you're going, but they don't want you to be on the 50 because you'll showstop the game and everybody just wants to show you the whole time. So are they not letting you into the stadium or what?
Oh, hey, I'm getting ready to pack my bags and go to Bermuda. Eli's playing at Port Royal.
Oh,
so unfortunately, I do not get to go. I wish I could say it was. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And
the venues.
I've offered to
caddy.
Be the caddy for Steven and Eli both. And they both turned me down so far. I don't know what it is. So anyway.
Well, who knows? Perhaps
if that was a cute blonde, they'd do it. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, we do have a lot to unpack, and I want to get a preview and get your thoughts on the national championship with Michigan and Washington. I mean, how surprised are you, James, to see the Huskies face the Wolverines for the ultimate prize on Monday night?
Oh, I'm not surprised. I mean,
okay.
Washington has been the best offense in college football this year. Michael Penix has been incredible. They remind me of the Oklahoma offenses under Kyler and Baker, with Lincoln Riley under the control, and they don't have a great defense. I know you didn't have a great defense either. You know, when the Sooners lost to Georgia in the Rose Bowl, that was probably the best defense OU had under Lincoln. And, OU had Baker at quarterback, and they had a great offense at that point. And this is what Washington reminds me of, and it's the kind of matchup I think they're kind of into. You know, Michigan has been the best all-around team in college football this year. They're undefeated. They've met all comers and beaten all comers. Washington's undefeated, but they've done it primarily on the back of a great offense and a great wide receiving core and a running back that's tough as nails. And, you know, this is a great matchup in that regard. There's a reason why Michigan is favored. It's because they have a better defense. But can Michael Penix, one more time, solve a great defense and lead his team to victory? I mean, he was so good in the last game.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, his pro stock has shot up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves the guy. And so that's what's really going to be interesting. And so, to me, I've seen this matchup before, though. I mean, Oklahoma had the best offense in college football for a couple of years under Lincoln Riley and with Baker and Kyler and Jalen Hurts and those guys at quarterback. And I've seen this. And we'll see if the Huskers can do a better job than OU did and overcome what has been an average defense for them. I mean, they played pretty good defense against Texas until that last drive, and all of a sudden they were reverted back to old form, and Texas in four plays had it down at the 12-yard line. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see just how good Washington is on defense in this game.
Well, yeah, you talk so much about the offense, but, I mean, can Washington match up in the trenches with Michigan? I mean, they pushed Alabama around in the Rose Bowl, and, I mean, they really flexed.
Right, that's exactly right. You know, can they? You know, I don't know. You know, they did a pretty good job against, in the matchup against Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Texas did post some yardage on them. I don't know if they can match up or not. This comes down, they can't have an offensive letdown. Their offense has to be great.
Right.
It would be great if they can get a lead and let Michigan, which is not good or not as good, trying to come from behind, because Michigan wants to have the lead, and then they want their defense to take control of the game. So who can get on top? If Washington can get on top, have some success, and then maybe their defense will rally and get a stop. I mean, the Washington defense has a chance here because, you know, while Michigan offense with Corum and, you know, and their great quarterback and everything that they've got going is a positive thing, you know, it's not. You know, it's not Washington's offense. It's not Oregon. I mean, it's a pretty good offense, but, you know, Corum is great. Odunze is for Washington is great. The two quarterbacks are really, really good. I think Washington, as good as the Michigan quarterback is, you know, I think Washington has the edge there, and that doesn't happen very often. So I don't know. It's going to be a really good matchup. I just think Washington, to make this game exciting, their offense has to be in top form, and they might not win even if it is. But if it is, they've got a puncher's chance at the end.
Hey, the countdown is on for the national championship, Michigan and Washington. And so let's take some time to talk about Michigan and how they held Alabama to that season-low 288 yards of total offense in that semifinal win. I mean, just how impressed are you with Jim Harbaugh's, you know, it was a big win against Nick Saban.
Well, seven sacks tells it, you know, and Alabama has one of the best offensive lines in football. And they had seven sacks in the game. They had 12 tackles for loss. So that means the Michigan defensive line and linebackers won the battle. And that was impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, Michigan, they've recorded 16 sacks in the past four games, four against Iowa, six against Alabama. They were always in the Crimson Tide's backfield. They only gave up, what, 42 yards rushing to Alabama? Or, you know, and they sacked Milrow five times. So, you know, Penix has only been sacked four and a half times in the last eight or nine games. He's been sacked 11 times all season, so it's less than one a game. He gets rid of the ball quick, and he gets rid of the ball quick with accuracy. So this is the game within the game, right? Can Michigan, once again, get great pass rush, force Penix off his spot, force Penix to even throw it earlier than he wants to, and he gets rid of the ball quick. But if he's not on time, then all of a sudden, he's throwing incompletions, and they get behind the chains. Usually, they're completing passes, and it's a second and one, a third and one. And, you know, Michigan, if they can, with their great defensive line, can stop that. Because Michigan, I mean, Washington's going to try to run the football. Now, their running back has a hurt foot, and gosh, you know, he almost cost him because he wouldn't get off the field late in the semifinal game. Mm-hmm. Is he ready to go? You know, he says he is, so they say nothing can keep him from playing in this game, so we'll see. But, you know, I just think that Michigan's defense and its pass rush is so good, but Washington has been so good at protecting Penix, and Penix can be the star in this game if he can get the pass off.
Hey, he's playing hurt. We love when he's on the program. James Hale, CBS Sports Radio Network, host of Total Sports. Check him out, 2 to 5 Central Time in OKC. And, of course, give him a follow on X at jhale24. And let's have you connect with our audience. Patreon, what are they going to find, James?
You just go to Die Hard Suda Report on Patreon. I do 3 to 5 podcasts a day. Even when I sound like this, I still get the podcast done. And, you know, and it's
bless your heart. You
know, it's the quickest way if you're a Sooner fan that you're going to get your information. You know, it's 3 to 5 minutes per report, sometimes a little less. And, you know, you're going to get the nuts and bolts. And I'll give you a quick opinion on what I think about it. And, you know, I think it's really the great way that you can get your information. And it doesn't cost you very much to join. So,
well, hey, I know we always love talking about the Sooners. Give me a hit on Texas and that loss in the Sugar Bowl. I mean, why did they come up short?
Well, they, you know, I mean, they just ran into, you know, a hotter team. Penix was better than yours, even though yours was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Texas was running the football pretty well, and they got away from it, I thought, and threw the ball better. It, you know, went back to throwing the football. Texas's defense, which was a better defense coming in the game, couldn't stop Penix, and he was magnificent in the game. Again, Penix won this game more than Texas lost it or Ewers lost it. But think about it. I mean, here's Texas, because Washington totally botches the final minute and a half of that game. They should have been taking a knee and running the clock out, but, you know, gosh, what's the running back's name? Johnson or something? I mean, he gets hurt, and you know, instead of, if I'd have been the offensive guard and tackle, I'd have carried the dude off. Because you don't want, you know, you don't want the clock to stop, right? So you want them to burn a timeout. Instead, they get to keep their timeout. And, you know, they got to come out to tend to him. And, you know, it just kind of, and Texas gets the ball back with 42 seconds and almost stole the game. Texas has nothing to hang their head about.
Yep.
They lost two games this year. They made it to the college football playoffs for the first time. It looks like their program is building towards moving to the SEC and to be a solid contender again. Arch Manning is waiting in the wings. They continue to recruit good skill guys. You know, I think things are good at UT, and they're going to be a formidable opponent for anybody that plays them in the future.
Legendary radio host of Huddle Sports, CBS Sports Radio in OKC. Give him a follow at jhale24. James, all the best. You get some rest and start drinking that chicken broth, okay?
Alrighty, I'll do it. Thanks. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yes, stick around. Much more coming your way here at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.